Well, right now we're going one-on-one with Brian Ross. He is an author, baseball historian. In the first segment, we were talking about baseball's greatest comeback, the Miracle Braves of 1914. A little bit of a history lesson. Let's continue with that, Brian. Talk to me about when spring training, when did that get underway?
Well, that goes back a long time. Just after the Civil War, Boss Tweed, the mayor of New York, who ran it with an iron fist, he had his own baseball team, and he brings the New York Mutuals down to New Orleans. Then it started to take off in the 1880s, and especially the 1890s, during the small ball era, their dead ball era, as it was called, and there was the teams realized that they needed to sharpen their skills, the sacrifice bunt, the stealing, hit and run, all big parts of the dead ball era. You could improve on those if you had spring training, and the team starts to realize, like the Baltimore Orioles, well, let's practice some more in the spring, and then we'll win a championship. And it turned out to be true, so they start doing it, 1890s, early 1900s, but it's spread out all across the southern part of the country. I mean, and it changed from year to year where teams would go, and it was somewhat unscheduled. I mean, by our standards today, it was pretty chaotic. But by the 1920s, it's going to settle down in Florida. The Citrus League will really be established in the 1920s.
How did World War II, how did that affect spring training?
Yeah, World War II really changed baseball in so many ways. I mean, first of all, we thought that we might not play baseball during the war, but then Franklin Roosevelt decided, yeah, we got to keep our national pastime going. So he gave what was called the famous green light letter. But so many players went and played in the. So many players were drafted. They had to get a lot of AA players to come up and a lot of older players. But spring training really didn't exist in the way it had because there was the scarcity of fuel and fuel was being rationed and the government decided to only give baseball teams a certain amount of fuel or allow them a certain amount of fuel. So they couldn't go far. They couldn't go down south. They couldn't travel. So they stayed near their cities, and they practiced in YMCAs. They practiced at college fields. So they did not have, during the war, they did not have spring training as we know it. But spring training really takes a different course after the war. That's when, you know, it's 1947 when Jackie Robinson breaks the color barrier.
Right,
so
right.
That had a big influence on how spring training was conducted.
I was going to say, how much did that change when Jackie Robinson broke that color barrier?
Yeah, well, it changed and it didn't. On the one hand, of course, African-American players are going to be going down to Florida to practice with the teams. And so if you've seen the movie 42, and if you've seen the opening, one of the earlier scenes when Jackie Robinson goes down for one of the first spring trainings in Florida, and he's with the Dodgers minor league team, the Royals, and he faces taunting. He cannot stay in the same hotel with the other players, and he has to go through all of these struggles. Just horrible. And that is what it was like for most of the African American players for a long time. That's the one thing that struck me when I looked back at the historical record, that even though Major League Baseball was integrated from 1947 on, it's not until 1954 that spring training is integrated. It takes a long time for this to happen. So you have all of these well-known baseball players, you know, the Cardinals, Kurt Flood and Bill White and Bob Gibson. They're living in segregated hotels and then starting to complain about it and starting their own civil rights movement of sorts. So it took a lot to change things in Florida in the 50s and 60s.
Author and baseball historian, and his book is Baseball's Greatest Comeback, The Miracle Braves of 1914. Brian Ross is joining us at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Only have time for a few more questions. Since we're on the topic of spring training, what was the economic impact of having spring training?
Yeah, that is a fascinating question. I think it seems to me that it's generally favorable in that towns and cities throughout Arizona and Florida get the benefit of having their name publicized and associated with a major league team. But there's a guy named Philip Porter, an economist, who studied teams in Florida, and he studied, he'll look, for instance, a team in a certain town, they might move out of the town. He'll look at sales tax revenue when the team was there and when they left. And he has found that the sales tax revenue stays the same. So, in other words, the team is not having a big economic impact. If people would go to Florida and Arizona anyway and spend money, and so that maybe baseball is not attracting as much as politicians claim. Now, every politician in Florida and Arizona will say, yeah, this is great. This is really going to bring money to the town. But economists debate it highly. They have all kinds of data saying, well, maybe not. But it's all great fun, and that's an important thing for me.
I'm curious, what about as far as spring training, how it developed in the 70s and 80s?
One of the things about spring training is that it's in constant turmoil. I mean, it's in the 70s. It took a while for it to be established so that there were 15 teams in Arizona and 15 in Florida. That really took a long time. And even as late as the 1980s, we weren't sure if they were going to be all in Arizona. In Arizona, there were some political difficulties, and the state canceled the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, and that caused some consternation. But eventually, things changed in Arizona, and they passed a tax to use revenue from car rentals to pay for stadiums. And they've done the same thing in Florida. But there's so many communities out there that would love to have a baseball team that I think it's going to be in turmoil in the future even.
Hey, Brian Ross has been with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Author, baseball historian, of course, his book, Baseball's Greatest Comeback, The Miracle Braves of 1940. We're going to be talking some more MLB. Up next is Andy Pondillo as we get ready for an AL East preview. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Brian.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Listen.
Okay, stay close. Much more straight ahead as we continue to go around the horn.